Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 4th of April. It was 44 years ago today that Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated. In the second hour of our program today, we have a combination of topics. The summer of 68, the season that changed baseball in America forever. This is also the week that the boys of summer return, and the book is really interesting. It looks at how baseball responded to the tumultuous year of 1968. This hour, we talk about, I don't know if it was tumultuous or not, but the results of the Wisconsin primary. We'll also look at the recall race here in the state of Wisconsin. And we have three terrific guests with us. Mike Goucher is joining us in our studios in Milwaukee, distinguished fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University Law School, host of the statewide public affairs TV program Upfront with Mike Goucher. Good morning, Mike. Thanks
good to,
for being
good
with us.
Good to be here, Kathleen.
Also joining us is Professor Kathleen Dolan, Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Professor Dolan, thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. And in just a little while, Chuck Kornbach will join us, our reporter here in Milwaukee. He is Wisconsin Public Radio's Milwaukee-based reporter and knows his politics. He was at the Romney event last night at the Grain Exchange building, and he met Gingrich a couple times and Santorum many times, so he's been following all of the candidates for quite some time. We'll be welcoming phone calls, and I'm interested in hearing your response to what happened. Mitt Romney, of course, winning the primary in Wisconsin by not by that much, actually. I thought it would be a larger victory. It's about 5 points this morning, with Brookfield, I understand, still having their votes out. We'll talk a little bit about that during this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. It seemed to me in watching Romney last night, Mike Goucher, that everything changed a little bit. His wife wasn't there. His children weren't there. It wasn't a rally. It was a whole different acceptance event. Did you think that was true?
Well, he certainly didn't spike the football last night. It wasn't a celebratory end zone dance. I think he sort of left the next move to Rick Santorum. We've got 3 weeks here. Santorum will be under enormous pressure from people within his party to drop out of the race. And I think Mitt Romney, rather than saying, you know, it's time to coalesce around me, he's going to leave that decision to Rick Santorum. And I think strategically, that's probably a pretty smart move.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Professor Dolan?
Oh, I think that Mike is exactly right. I think part of the problem for Rick Santorum is we've got this three-week lag now before the next set of states, and he's got his heart set on doing well in Pennsylvania, which votes on April 24th. He may or may not. You know, that remains to be seen. He and Mitt Romney are running relatively close in the polls right now in Pennsylvania. But the real challenge for him is, what does he do for these 3 weeks? How does he maintain how does he maintain attention? How does he, you know, not cave into this pressure to drop out? So the calendar is really working against him, as is almost everything else.
I was telling Mike before the show that I never get all these robocalls. But man, did I get robocalls this go around, and probably 7-1. I had one Santorum call. They were almost all Romney calls.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about the amount of money that is spent in this race and the number of TV ads that we saw. They were virtually all Romney ads. Where does all this money come from, and why didn't Santorum gather more money for media?
It's been a problem throughout the campaign for Santorum. He really has one major funder, Foster Freeze, who has a guy who's from Rice Lake, but has made an awful lot of money, and he's helped fund one of the super PACs that does work on behalf of Santorum. But that has been really a drop in the bucket compared to the super PAC, the Restore Our Future super PAC, that has supported Romney throughout this. They have had an awful lot of money to throw around. They have. And I think they've been effective in the way they've used it. Some people may not like the tone of our politics and our discourse, but in political campaigns, negative attack ads can work. And I think what they did from the period of mid-February until yesterday, they raised questions about Rick Santorum's conservative values. They raised questions about whether Rick Santorum could indeed be the nominee. They did their job. And so I think for a guy like Mitt Romney, as we know, legally you're not allowed to coordinate these attacks. So Mitt Romney could run his own campaign, a mixture of positive and negative ads. But there was the super PAC all the way making sure that people knew about certain parts of Rick Santorum's record. Santorum simply did not have the resources to fight back.
Mm-hmm. So Romney had a lot of resources, Professor Dolan.
Well, the interesting thing about this election, given that it's the first presidential election we run after the Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court, in some ways the dynamic of this primary is different in that Santorum and Gingrich have been able to hang on as long as they have because of these sort of single donor super PACs working on their behalf. And, you know, without those super PACs, those two are not in it at this point. I mean, Gingrich is clearly not in it, but they don't have, you know, the legs that they would have this year. So it's a very interesting dynamic. I mean, Mitt Romney's campaign and the super PAC on his behalf certainly has more resources than anyone else on the block. But the ability of those other two candidates to stay in as long as they did and have is in part because of these new ways of doing business. And then once we shift to the general, the super PACs are going to have a really significant impact. And, you know, as we say in political science, campaigns are all about information. So these super PACs have been working to inform voters who are just now starting to pay attention. You know, over the summer into the fall, they'll start paying attention more and more. And these ads will be there to try to create impressions of the candidates.
Just now paying attention made me think, how the heck long have we been paying attention? It seems like forever already, doesn't it? We're not normal, are we? We're really not normal. You're thinking, Santorum was in Pennsylvania last night, close to his hometown, and you wonder about whether or not he can stay in at the risk of losing his home state. Wouldn't that be terribly embarrassing?
Yeah.
Well, it would be, wouldn't it?
Sure.
Yeah, it would absolutely be embarrassing. And we should say that night, no matter what happens in Pennsylvania, is not going to be necessarily a great night for Rick Santorum.
No.
I mean, if he wins, he's expected to win. Pennsylvania is his home state. But look at the other states that are up that night. This is, as some people have referred to it, as, you know, the political version of the Big East. I mean, you've got New York State, you've got Connecticut, you've got Rhode Island, you've got Delaware. Mitt Romney's going to do very well in all those states. So whatever achievement Rick Santorum can claim on election night in late April, hey, I won Pennsylvania, people are going to go, big deal. You were supposed to win Pennsylvania. If he loses, you're right, Kathleen, It would be a tough way for to end a campaign that I think has surprised many people. If you were to ask people a number of months ago, let's go back to last summer when the candidates were working Iowa pretty hard and said, gee, Rick Santorum's going to be the guy who's going to emerge to challenge Mitt Romney. No one would have believed you back then. So it's been an incredible ride, but it appears the ride is just about over for him.
Let's talk about President Obama's comments. We'll get to Paul Ryan's budget in a moment. But he was saying that Ronald Reagan could not have won the GOP primary today, that it is so conservative now that Ronald Reagan simply would not have been conservative enough. Do you agree with that, Kathleen?
Well, you know, the thing that I think is interesting about President Obama's comments yesterday is that he's clearly decided that Paul Ryan is as big a target as is Mitt Romney.
Oh, interesting.
You know, He, in taking on the budget and in taking on the Republicans in Congress yesterday in that speech, he really, I think, is trying to set the frame that he's going to use for the general election campaign, which is the extreme nature of the Republican Party, as particularly as articulated through this budget document that Paul Ryan has worked so hard on. And I think we are going to hear a lot of that argument that, you know, the president's making, that Ronald Reagan couldn't get elected in this party. You know, we're going to have that same conversation here in Wisconsin. This is sort of jumping the gun, but, you know, Tommy Thompson's place in the Wisconsin Republican Party as it has sort of shifted to the right as well. So I think that's going to be a continuing theme that Democrats are going to try to make, is that the shift and the drift has been very extreme, and we're going to hear the word extreme a lot, and we're going to hear all of these things about how on the sort of margins the Republican Party has become. And clearly this budget is going to be one of the tools the president uses to make that distinction.
Mike.
I think Kathleen hits on an interesting point. I mean, Paul Ryan in many respects has become the face of the Republican Party. He's become the big ideas guy in the party, and the president recognizes that, and so he's going to use Paul Ryan as a foil. And And I think what you heard from the president yesterday is something you will hear time and time again. The word extreme is one of the favorite words in the Democratic Party today. They love to use it when talking about the Republican Party. And I think you'll hear it repeatedly throughout the campaign. The question is, what will be the Democratic vision? And I think it is one thing that the Democrats have to figure out how they want to message this. They're very critical of the Ryan budget plan. They're very critical of his ideas on Medicare. And yet, I don't think the Democrats, I think it'd be safe to say, most observers would say, that they have not articulated their own version of how we deal with some of the pressing issues facing Medicare, facing Social Security. What is the plan? And I think the Republicans will try and turn it into that kind of conversation. The Democrats will try and keep it focused on that's the party over there that's protecting the rich folks. That's not who you want to have in power. So it's going to be an interesting contrast of ideas, and each side's going to have to make sure that they articulate their vision for the future. It'll be a fascinating few months.
Do you think, Professor Dolan, that Romney also has a vision problem?
Yeah, well, I think he's got a vision problem. I think he's got a set of issue problems. You know, he's been boxed in forever by the similarities between the national health care plan that President Obama moved through Congress and his own version of the health care plan that was in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. The president is clearly going to capitalize on the Affordable Care Act being before Congress and, or excuse me, before the Supreme Court, and see how that's going to play out. So Romney's, one of the problems the Republicans have had, I think, particularly on health care, is they've been fighting as hard as they have against that particular plan, but there aren't a lot of alternatives. There aren't plans. They say, here's really how we should be solving the problem. So I think he's boxed in on that issue, which will be a big piece of the campaign. Increasingly, he's without the economic arguments. I mean, his whole portfolio is about, you know, electing the managerial president who will get us out of these economic problems. And as the economic indicators start to inch in a direction that is more positive than negative for the president, Romney loses the strength of that economic argument. A year ago, that looked like a slam dunk. Today, it doesn't necessarily look as good. And so lately, if you notice, Governor Romney's comments have been more in line of, well, the improvement isn't coming fast enough. He didn't do enough. You know, they're not doing it the right way. That's an incremental argument. That's a hard argument on which to hang a presidential campaign. So he bought into the sort of managerial argument. He's in some ways kind of stuck with that frame, and he's never really packaged himself as a candidate with a vision for the country. So I think he you know, will be vulnerable to those charges.
It's going to be very interesting to see what happens with this health care, because we interviewed, I remember the interview very vividly, the gentleman, the doctor who fashioned, was one of the primary fashioners of the health care bill in Massachusetts that was Romney's bill. He was the same person who went to Washington, D.C. to fashion the reform bill that Congress passed. Exactly the same person. Mm-hmm. So many of the ideas are very much the same. How does Romney deal with that, Mike?
Well, he's been dealing with it ever since he signed it. I mean, he's been under fire from people within his own party. He's explained it. I interviewed him about a year ago, and I asked him that very question. And he was already making the argument, and you've heard him make it fairly often now, that this is really a state issue, that this should not be a national mandate. And I think, you know, I don't know if that has satisfied some in the Republican Party, but that's going to be the argument, that you don't want this massive, you know, 2,000-page bill dictating what health care coverage is going to look like in America. You need to leave that up to the states. So it is interesting how he's tried to pivot from that issue. I still think it's a little sticky. And as you can see, the Obama administration delights in tying him to, quote, Obamacare, unquote. They really enjoy that. And I think they're trying to just cast doubts on the people who are the most conservative in the Republican Party and say, just remember, this guy did pretty much what we tried to do on a national level. That's a very tough issue for Mitt Romney. He's trying to have a consistent answer to those questions, but it is a difficult issue for him.
And is the Supreme Court deliberation a tough issue for President Obama, Kathleen?
Just one comment I wanted to make to follow up on Mike's first. I agree with him that the argument that Governor Romney is trying to make is a difficult one. But there's a larger difficult problem there, and that is sort of a federalism question. Because if Romney wants to make the argument that health care shouldn't be a national problem, then the Democratic response is, okay, let's leave it up to states and let's see how we have winners and losers across states. And health care really is one of those things that people have come to see as a fundamental piece of human life. And so if I live in Wisconsin and we happen to have a better plan than somebody else, you know, that sort of feeds right into the Democrats' argument that everybody deserves attention to a fundamental issue. So I'm not sure that serves Romney any better than any of the other arguments he's trying to make there. Mm-hmm. The piece of the Affordable Care Act, you know, politically, in that a Supreme Court decision will come at some time in late June or early July, it's hard to tell at this point, you know, how that's going to play for the president. If it's upheld, obviously that's an enormous political as well as policy victory for him. There are lots of people who are trying to argue right now that if it's struck down, it's a political victory for him as well, because then he can run against the recalcitrant Supreme Court. Then he can run against the conservative sort of tides in the country that are trying to stymie this process. So I wouldn't predict at all at this point what's going to happen and the fallout from it. You know, I mean, to me, there's a downside to a president, you know, having his signature legislative success struck down by the Supreme Court months before he tries to be reelected. There's certainly a negative to that. But other people will argue that there are lots of positive pieces he can spin out of that kind of defeat.
It strikes me, I don't know the history here, but isn't it strange that part of the election could be the president running against the Supreme Court?
Oh, go ahead, Mike.
No, go ahead, Kathleen.
I was saying, you know, they do in some ways. I mean, you know, if he runs against the Supreme Court directly, that'll be different than, you know, we've often seen in the past. And there are some dangers to that, so I'm not sure how his decision-making will go there. But Supreme Courts and the justices in the nomination process, they've been on our agenda in presidential politics for many years now. And, you know, if only for the more sophisticated voters who are paying attention and understand that a president comes with the possibility of nominations. And so I think that people do think about the court in presidential politics. They think about the winner getting the, you know, the nominations power. If we see the president go after the Roberts Court and in a very visible way, that will be a little more high stakes than we usually see. But I'm not sure he does that. You know, I think that's a set of calculations that the president would have to make.
Elena Kagan, Supreme Court Justice, was at Marquette Law School. You moderated that.
Yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Did she say anything about
No, she
nothing.
Was very emphatic that she could not talk about anything related to the Affordable Care Act. So we wish we could have gone there, but she just said, I cannot talk about it, and I can't even talk about the politics surrounding it. So that was, you know.
She told some funny stories, though.
Yeah, she did tell some funny stories. She wanted to stress that the court was far more collegial than many of us in the media would believe, that it's not this partisan, divided court, that they actually get along. And she told these actually quite humorous stories about her new hunting prowess. apparently, Justice Scalia has taken her from being a non-hunter to a hunter. And so the two of them have gone out and shot grouse and pheasant.
Oh, my.
And she's going to go antelope hunting.
No.
With Justice Scalia.
No.
Yeah.
Cameras will follow that?
She said, he's made a huntress out of me. Those were her words. So you know, I'm sure behind closed doors, some of the arguments, some of the conferences are pretty interesting and pretty tense at times. Mm-hmm. But at least publicly, it's a very happy place to be.
Right. It's quite a story. Well, welcome phone calls. Chuck Kornbach will be joining us momentarily as well. Wisconsin Public Radio's Milwaukee-based reporter. He does a lot of politics and has over the years. And he was at the Romney event at the Green Exchange building in downtown Milwaukee yesterday and He also covered Gingrich and Santorum, and he'll give us his reflections, and we'll welcome phone calls. I don't mean to put the listeners off, so here's the number. Feel free to join our conversation. We, of course, are talking about the elections. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email, if you want to use that, is talk@WPR.org. Coming up the second hour of our program, the author of The Summer of 68, The Season That Changed Baseball in America Forever. For those of you who are alive during that summer, as I was, you'll remember it as being such a hard day, not just day, a hard year in American life. Opening day was postponed and played in the shadow of Martin Luther King's funeral. He was assassinated in 1968 on April 4th. For some players, the sport was a retreat from the turmoil. For others, some of them refused to play after the assassination of Bobby Kennedy, but the conflicts really spurred them to be angry baseball players and made them better players. It's a fascinating story. All right, two phone calls to Chuck. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll go to your phone calls in just one moment. Let's take one call right now, and then we'll talk to Chuck. Raymond in River Falls. Hi, Raymond. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning. One quick comment, one quick question. It seems to me I've heard the Republican Party running against activist judges for forever, so I don't think that Obama doing it would be anything new. But my question is, goes back to, I'm going to call your guests out and say, Kathleen asked you both if Ronald Reagan could be nominated by this current Republican Party, and I didn't hear an answer to her question, so I'm going to reiterate it.
All right, Raymond. Mike?
Well,
whoops, let me get your mic on. Here.
I've given up making predictions. I can't answer that. I will say that I think the party in some respects is more conservative today than it was when Ronald Reagan was running. Clearly so. We talked about health care. An example of that is in the early 90s, the Heritage Foundation, which is a leading conservative think tank, had been one of the proponents of mandated health insurance coverage. That was more or less a Republican idea. It was an argument about personal responsibility. And now that argument has become, no, it's about government telling us what to do, and we just can't abide by that. So that is an example that I think clearly the party has become more conservative. Tommy Thompson has told me that personally. I've said it's a different party. It's a more conservative party. He said, yes, it is. And you can even see the way Tommy Thompson is running his campaign. He's trying to move to the right. He's trying to tap into where the party is today. So I guess the answer is I don't know if Ronald Reagan could be elected in today's party. He was a very popular politician who had a lot of charisma and had a way of winning elections, certainly. But I will say the party, I think, by almost any definition, is a more conservative party than it was, say, in the mid-1970s or 1980.
Professor Dolan.
You know, I would agree with Mike on the it's so hard to tell. It's, you know, really hard to say much of value on an issue like that. But I guess I would say let's not forget that Ronald Reagan was a pretty conservative guy himself. I mean, he brings positions into the Republican Party that had not been there before. You know, he shifts the Republican Party platform to a pro-life platform in 1980. He sort of, you know, contributes and sets the stage for the sort of rise of the social issues that come into the party. His budgets, you know, were pretty conservative for the time period. So he certainly is a standard bearer for those sorts of things. I think the interesting piece that Mike hits on there is not so much and the party clearly has shifted to the right. That's not an issue. But the way that the issue frames have changed, because I think Mike's exactly right that President Obama would say, hey, you know, the mandate used to be a Republican idea. It used to be something that was very positive because it was framed as a responsibility issue. Now, with the Tea Party influences, et cetera, everything is so anti-government on the Republican side that they have shifted the basis of their reasoning, and now they're in opposition. So I think that not only has the drift been to the right, but the underlying values have shifted in a way, right? And the way that the arguments are framed. So something. I mean, the Affordable Care Act with the individual mandate was the alternative to probably what more Democrats and progressives would have wanted, would have been universal health care managed by the government.
Yeah.
So what now, you know, looks to be an unacceptable compromise used to be something that was pretty squarely in the Republican wheelhouse.
Chuck Wernbach joining us now. Chuck is Wisconsin Public Radio's Milwaukee-based reporter, and he's been covering Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich for weeks and weeks now, and was at the Grain Exchange building last night. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, Kathleen.
Thank you very much for being with us. Tell me about Paul Ryan. I get those guys mixed up. No, I shouldn't get them mixed up. I'm not. But Paul Ryan was really front and center last night, and he's been front and center. What's going on with the two of them? Is this the VP? Is he going to bring in more votes for Mitt Romney?
Well, I think it's supposedly the photogenic qualities Ryan has appealing, putting him up on television versus, say, Congressman Sensenbrenner. And Ryan's drawing a fire from President Obama, and Romney says, well, Ryan would be useful to me on that front as well in fighting back at President Obama. So, you know, the Democrats are calling it a bromance between Ryan and Romney, and there are various reasons why.
What was the deal with last night? It seemed so subdued to me. It was so unlike any other primary, the acceptance.
Well, that's somewhat seems to be Romney's personality. It was, off, after all, in the Grain Exchange, very elegant, ornate, restored building, and there are several people there from, let's say, Whitefish Bay and suburbs like that that don't get too demonstrative. So it seemed to fit people that were in the room. The heads of the Milwaukee Association of Commerce were there, and some other business leaders. So it was sort of a white-collar business gathering.
You also had a chance to travel with Rick Santorum and also with Newt Gingrich. What are your thoughts about the outcome? It looks like, I guess, Brookfield votes are not in yet, unless you know something differently. Are the Brookfield votes in?
Well, or are they in and they're just sitting in the Waukesha County computer? I don't know. I hadn't heard that, but
they've got problems in Waukesha, don't they? They need to figure this out.
Well, they will have an election later this year for county clerk, so that may be figured out. So, no, I hadn't heard about any Brookfield votes not being in. I'm guessing they went heavily for Romney, but there's social conservatives in Brookfield. There's many social conservatives around the state that went for Santorum. You know, I talked to in West Bend the other day. I talked to a woman from Slinger who was there to greet Santorum, and, you know, loves everything he's doing and saying, but I asked her would she vote for for Romney in the fall, and she says, you know, I'm going to have to go back and think about that. And there's probably a lot of people that are voted for Santorum that are going to have to think about voting for Romney. Now, on Saturday, this Faith and Freedom Coalition event in Waukesha that I attended, Pewaukee, headed by Ralph Reed, really, from the national end of things, you know, he announced an effort to make sure there's a big outreach to social conservatives, phone calls and follow-ups over the next few months and into the fall. So there will be a concentrated effort to reach out to these social conservatives that were more Santorum voters than Romney voters, to make them make them get out to the polls, so they don't stay at home like many of them apparently did when John McCain ran against Obama.
You know, Kathleen, and there are, even in a state like Wisconsin, a fair number of those social conservatives. If you looked at the map last night and county-by-county breakdowns, you saw Rick Santorum doing very well in places like Brown County. That's the Green Bay area. He had a very decisive win there. He did very well in Marathon County. That's the Wausau area in the central part of the state. So Republicans have to make sure those people are brought into the fold, that they're enthusiastic about Mitt Romney, if indeed he is the nominee. There are more of those folks out there than some people might think, even in a state like Wisconsin, which is not Alabama and it's not Mississippi. But the Republican Party has some work to do to make sure those people feel excited about this candidate.
Mm-hmm. Are those people, I was interested, switching just for a moment to the recall election, the exit polls were showing 8 in 10 Republican voters in Wisconsin approving of Governor Scott Walker and 7 in 10 strongly. What do you make of those numbers, Chuck?
Well, at Saturday night in Pewaukee, the dinner featured Governor Walker and Santorum, and Romney were there as well. But, you know, the longest speech, I think, went to Governor Walker, and the loudest ovation went to Governor Walker, some loud ovation for Paul Ryan as well. So there's a passion right now for Scott Walker in the state that Romney and Santorum tied into, maybe not arm in arm as you might have with an incumbent governor who wasn't facing a recall, but certainly a lot of praise for Scott Walker trying to tap into that electoral, apparently Republican electoral support for Walker.
Professor Jolin, why wasn't it arm in arm with Scott Walker?
Well, the governor is popular, but in some ways he's just a little too radioactive right now. I mean, he's busy. He's got a lot on his plate, and I think people want to see how it's going to shake out. I find the recall and the recall season coming up to be the most interesting thing on the electoral horizon for
us
right now here in Wisconsin. I think it just puts all of the sort of typical the things we might see have, well, you know, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. I mean, all of those things, I think, are just thrown into disarray because the governor, who is a very prominent person both sort of nationally and here, it's all up in the air. I mean, we just don't know what's going to happen, and he is, popular, but also, there are some downsides.
Our number is 800-486-8655. Let's go to a few phone calls. John in Waukesha. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning. Two very fast comments and a question. Comment one, Romney care on the state level. I think to what the professor was saying, I don't agree. I think that if you do something on the state level, it's the state level. If somebody compares it to what they decide to copy and put it on the federal level, that's their problem. So, I mean, you can say the same thing about many issues. If Obama had a bill for gay marriage, he could start comparing it to even that state of Massachusetts. So, to me, there's no argument there. The problem is the muddiness and the understanding of the American people, and it works to their Obama's favor. But really, it's cut and dry. It's just things on the state level are irrelevant to the fact that someone copies that on a federal level. Comment two is, I think that it's, you guys also mentioned, a very paradoxical thing. I don't agree with Citizens United on paper, but we could see almost here a positive of that by letting people stay in a race longer because they have more funding to keep up with that one guy in the front. And then finally, my question is, what does the panel feel about the fact that if you look at speaking of people staying in this race, we have, Ron Paul getting 12 points and 6 points to Gingrich. Either way, that's 18 points of people that if those guys would have dropped out, which you could say mathematically they have a blind tenacity, they shouldn't really be in this race, how much of that would have went against that 6% that Romney won last night? So, it's kind of, now you're going to see this with Santorum. Well, he won't leave. So it really, that is kind of all self-destructs. But if Gingrich would have got out sooner, even just Gingrich, you would say, well, people voted for Gingrich. That's why they didn't vote for Santorum. So how do you know their vote would have went to Santorum? But I would argue that people, when they're left with no choice, in a weird way applying to Romney here, have no choice, and they would have probably went. So my point is, people, how do you think about people staying in longer than they should?
Mike.
I never feel it's the role of journalists to dictate to candidates when they should get out of a race. And that's a very personal decision on the part of a candidate and the campaign. And so I don't really feel comfortable saying a person should leave because of X, Y, and Z. I will say this. I think the caller raises John raises a good point. It is sort of an interesting paradox that you have Citizens United and you have these, for lack of a better word, sugar daddies that do allow somebody like Newt Gingrich to stay in the race a long time, that do allow even Rick Santorum to stay in the race a long time. I guess the argument could be made that that's a good thing, that alternative voices are out there. But that's, I think that is offset to some degree by the fact that the American people aren't exactly sure who these voices are, who's paying for the ads. And I think so that, there's the transparency issue, I think, maybe offsets the value in allowing these voices to continue in the race.
Chuck, where was Newt Gingrich? Why didn't he campaign? His wife, after all, is from Wisconsin. Why didn't he give more of his talks all over the state?
Well, she made more appearances than he did, right? Yeah. To my knowledge, his two appearances were at Marquette University last Thursday night and Saturday morning at the Faith and Freedom event, not the Republican dinner Saturday night. You know, his campaign was starting to cut back staff last week, so maybe there had been plans for him to campaign more. Maybe he thought that, well, his wife was more palatable to some folks here than he was. You know, it just didn't seem, we got a few minutes with him backstage at Marquette. It didn't seem a lot of energy there. He seemed to not even be aware that his funder, Sheldon, right, was suggesting that Newt was near the end of the line. And Newt likes the attention, likes to give the lecture, college lecture type.
Right.
A presentation and argument, likes to argue with the students in a way a professor, certain professors might, I don't know.
Right.
Anyway, so, you know, he liked to plug his movies and books, too. That was seemed to be part of his message each time.
Yeah. Well, Mike was talking about the ideas guy being Ryan. Gingrich also could be fairly labeled the ideas guy. I mean, I think he talks way too much. He doesn't know when to stop. But he certainly, you know, he got the whole gasoline thing. It was Gingrich who brought up the 250-gallon of gas. And he's got, like him or not, he's a guy who's got some ideas.
He has a ton of ideas. In fact, there was a time when Paul Ryan and Newt Gingrich were I would say, fairly close. And Ryan indicated to me once that Gingrich would call him all the time with ideas. Some of them probably, in Ryan's view, having more merit than others and worth exploring more than others. But at a time, Newt Gingrich was the ideas guy. I think, but they're very different personalities. Ryan is much more disciplined in terms of messaging. Gingrich is more mercurial, I think would be a good way of putting it. But both have lots of ideas.
Yeah, you could see those calls coming at 2 in the morning, too, couldn't you? I'm not sure when they happened.
He said one of them came on Christmas Day
when
they were opening up gifts with the family.
No. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, what do you say to that? Sorry, I got other things going on here. Let's go to Tony in Tomahawk. Hi, Tony.
Hi, good morning. My question is about media not asking questions of the governor or of his campaign people or of his spokesperson, who is, after all, has a grant of immunity. The issue of corruption, Governor Walker hired this Tim Russell fella 7 times after this guy was fired from a state job. Those are facts reported in the Milwaukee paper. And then only Russell and Walker took the oversight of the veterans funding. They took that away from an American Legion post, for God's sakes, gave it to Russell only, and then Russell stole $20,000. Can you imagine if this was Governor Doyle that had done this? I don't see any electronic media asking questions about this level of corruption and incompetence.
You think we're going to hear that? The recall is just beginning. Kathleen?
Well, I do think that that could be a theme. I mean, we've got to get through the primary first and choose a Democrat. But surrogates on behalf of any of the Democrats could certainly start that sort of campaign. It does seem, I suppose, that given that Governor Walker came out of Milwaukee County, that it may be that there's still a lot of introducing that needs to be done to the rest of the state. And by that, I don't mean him as a person, but whatever the campaign issues might be that would play out, the Democrats probably feel like there might be lots of voters outstate who are not as familiar with his time in Milwaukee County and might not necessarily, those things, if they didn't get a full hearing in the last governor's race, those might be issues that could be exploited outstate as they try to make an argument against his recall.
Chuck, you've covered the recall pretty closely. What's the latest on John Doe?
Well, we don't know if there are going to be more charges or not. I saw District Attorney John Chisholm last Friday afternoon following a hearing of Kelly Weinfleisch, one of the people that have been charged, and Chisholm didn't really want to say what more was coming. He didn't want to. He's, you know, had held one news conference to announce some initial charges against Russell and so on, but other later charges were handled via press release. I would say there have been electronic media at these courtrooms. I've been in courtrooms that I haven't covered in years, covering Kelly Weinfleisch and Tim Russell and Brian Pyrick in Waukesha County. So there are media at these gaggles, these little events where Scott Walker takes questions. There are people asking him about John Doe. There could be more questions asked, of course, but his aides tend to want to cut things off after a few questions. So it's nice that he's available, the governor is, but he could be stick around a little bit longer to answer some of these questions. Dan Bice, the Journal Sentinel's investigative reporter, has come to the news conferences with these gaggles to ask the governor. So there are some stories out there, either that I've done or Dan has done or many others have done about the John Doe. And there will be more, although some of the courtroom cases will be not resolved until after the recall election.
Mm-hmm. I just want to jump in, too, as somebody who also works in the electronic media. I mean, we've had Governor Walker on the program. I did a show with him back on the Upfront program. I did a show with him back about a little over a month ago where we spent the entire first 10 minutes talking about the John Doe. I asked him who had hired Tim Russell. How did Tim Russell come to have that job? How did Tim Russell come to have the responsibilities he did? How did the governor not know anything about what might be happening in an office that was 20 feet away from him? I mean, there were a number of questions asked. So I think that there are members of the media asking questions. I think sometimes it's frustrating for the public because they feel they're not getting the answers they want to hear. But really, all reporters can do is ask questions. And it's up for the public to judge the answers and the value of the answers and the content of the answers.
Professor Dolan, what works best for the Democrats in terms of campaign strategy here to hit very hard on those issues that Mike and Chuck just enumerated, to take this on as the major campaign issue?
You know, I guess I would say probably not. I honestly don't have any idea how that's going to play out, but I guess I think that I would argue that the Democrats would probably be better off putting the focus on the recall, on the reasons for the recall, the turmoil with collective bargaining and those sorts of things, because I think one of the things about this whole period is that Wisconsin is really in a place where the politics are increasingly negative and increasingly hostile. And I don't think that increasing that by focusing exclusively or primarily on some set of corruption issues plays well with some voters. I mean, I think, you know, voters will always articulate to us that they are tired of dirty politics and tired of the negativity. Now, that the negativity works to persuade people is a separate issue, but I think just in terms of setting a tone for moving forward, I don't know that moving toward a real heavy focus on some of those corruption issues is the best idea. They'll probably get some play, but I don't imagine it would dominate. I would imagine they'll put their attention on the, you know, more underlying reasons that they pursued the recall in the first place.
Mike?
Kathleen, not surprisingly, this issue, the John Doe, finds Wisconsinites split, just as they are on many issues. We've done polling over at Marquette Law School on that specific question. What do you think of the John Doe probe? We explain it briefly, what it is, what's taking place. And then we ask people a simple question. Do you think it's something serious or do you think it's just politics? And the last poll we did that came out a little over a week ago found almost exactly a 50-50 split on that question. About 48%, I think, said they thought it was something serious. About 46% thought it was just politics. So, again, I mean, it's another example of our very divided politics in this state.
We're going to continue taking a few more phone calls. Chuck, thank you very much. What are you covering today, sir?
My eyelids.
You're covering your what?
Eyelids.
Your eyelids. You're going to take a nap?
I think so.
Thank you, Chuck.
Okay, thank you.
Chuck Kornbach, Wisconsin Public Radio, Milwaukee-based reporter who's been covering the primary fast and furious for some weeks now. More phone calls for our guests. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email, you can use that if you'd like, is talk@wpr.org. Mike Goucher, distinguished fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University, host of the statewide public affairs TV program Upfront with Mike Goucher, is in our Milwaukee studios, and Professor Kathleen Dolan joining us by phone, political science professor at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. A couple lines are open. I promise you we're going to you full force in just a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, the author of Summer of 68, The Season That Changed Baseball and America Forever, We're going to play a little bit. I just thought this was an incredible speech. So much happened during the summer. Martin Luther King was assassinated on this day, actually, in 1968. Bobby Kennedy was assassinated a few weeks later. Troop levels were at their highest in Vietnam. It was a really, really hard summer. And we're going to be talking about all of that. And, you know, sports and politics are intertwined. And certainly baseball reflected all that was going on in this country at that time. So we'll be speaking with the author of Summer of 68, Hour 2 of the show. It should be a really good conversation. Plus, we'll have a chance to hear Bobby Kennedy's speech in Indianapolis, where he quoted Aeschylus and kept riots from happening in that city. He gave that speech on this day in 1968. Dave in Wanakee, hi.
Yes, hello. I saw that yesterday a man wearing a Scott Walker for President shirt voted while he was packing heat. He had a holster. This was in Jackson County. And I wonder, I fear for what this means. I can see that in the future there will be many people showing up to vote while packing heat. And I wonder what the Republican Party has to say about this.
Well, we don't have anybody to speak for the Republican Party, but Professor Dolan, why don't you take this on?
You know, I honestly don't know. I guess I'm going to assume that the polling places were not an exception carved out of the concealed carry law. I don't know that to be the case. I can't say whether this was an isolated incident on which nobody followed up or whether it is truly legal to be able to carry guns in. If the caller is articulating some sense that there is intimidation involved by going in to vote with a gun, I don't necessarily know that that's any better or worse than being able to carry a gun in almost any other public place that it's allowed. So I guess without knowing much more about the situation, I'm not really sure what it symbolizes for us.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what that is. I mean, I'll just tell you, it seems to me kind of goofy to be able to carry a gun into a polling place, but those are my thoughts. There are some places that may not be appropriate to carry a gun. I don't know. But it poses an interesting question. I don't know what concealed carry says about carrying guns into polling places. Thanks, Dave, very much for the call. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. We're talking about yesterday's primaries, and we have some lines open. Do we have any idea about the number of people who turned out to vote in different parts of the state, who was wild about this election, who wasn't?
Well,
Mike?
The information I saw this morning indicated that they're thinking it was roughly about 1 million people turned out. And it's actually a turnout that was significantly above the last presidential primary in Wisconsin, 2008. More Republican voters this time around than last time around. And I think the number I saw was maybe about 700,000 or something like that,
yeah.
As opposed to, I think, 419,000 or something like that back in 2008. So there were more voters. It did not meet the projected turnout that state elections officials gave, but it was a pretty decent turnout, one of the higher ones, actually, for a Republican primary in the country, at least in the process this year. Is that right, Kathleen?
Yes, that's right. I mean, the state board is estimating about 16-17% turnout of eligible adults in the Republican primary, about 23% overall. One of the things that the Republicans do face as a challenge is that turnout in these primaries has been pretty low all over the country. Wisconsin, I think the figures this morning, they were saying this would rank us number two in turnout around the different states that have had primaries to this date. But almost everybody, with the exception of Wisconsin and maybe a couple of other states, has been running behind the levels that they saw in 2008. And so if that is any indication of Republicans being slow to excite about this campaign, that's going to give the party a place where it's really going to have to focus. But, you know, as I always tell my students, Wisconsin is always up at the top in voter turnout. And so, you know, you give us an opportunity and we'll show up.
Well, I wonder what you think about Democrats being slow to come to Obama and Republicans being slow to come to Romney. Is there a huge enthusiasm gap for both the candidates this year?
Well, I wouldn't say that it's a lack of enthusiasm on the part of the Democrats, because there's really no contest. I mean, if you went to the polls yesterday, you could vote for President Obama in the Democratic primary contest. But since there's no opposition, most people know that there's no reason to. So I don't know that the two situations are similar enough that we can interpret them in the same way. What I found interesting was that, yes, they're estimating that about 10% of the people who voted in the Republican primary yesterday here in Wisconsin were Democrats. So we had some Democrats who decided that they were going to have a little fun, perhaps. But I don't think that we can... I mean, I guess the first thing I would say is that this is still way too early for most people to be paying attention, most people who are not us. And so... turnout in the Republican Party, I think, means more because they're the ones with the active campaign. I don't think that Democratic participation can be called disengagement or a lack of enthusiasm yet, because there's really no contest going on.
I don't know about nationally, but as the late Tip O'Neill said, all politics is local, and in this state, there's a lot of passion right now. Whether it will still be there in November, I guess, is a fair question, but as of the moment, there is just an amazing amount of interest in what's happening in this state, and I think both parties in Wisconsin are going to try to tap into that for November. They think what's happening now will make a difference in November, so we'll see.
What about June?
I think we're going to have very high turnout in June for that final election.
I do, too.
The question will be, I think, the Democratic primary, because people want to vote in an election where Scott Walker is present. No matter how they feel about him, they want to vote there. Will Democrats turn out in big numbers for the primary? It's an important election for that party. We'll see.
Thank you both so much. I enjoyed the hour immensely. We'll have many more discussions as the months go on. Kathleen, thank you. Kathleen Dolan, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Mike Uchet, thank you, Mike.
Thanks.
Distinguished fellow in law and public policy at Marquette, host of Upfront with Mike Uchet, which you can hear and watch statewide. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, Rhonda Fanning for On Air Production, and thanks for listening.